This is GamesAtWork.biz with your hosts, Phaedra Boynodiris, Michael Martin, and Michael Rowe, your weekly podcast about gaming technology and play. The thoughts and opinions on this podcast are those of the hosts and guests alone, and not the opinions of any organization with which we have been, are, or may be affiliated with. This is episode 45, Googly Fun.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of GamesAtWork.biz. I'm Phaedra Boynodiris, and I'm joined here by my colleagues, Michael and Michael. Michael, Michaels, would you like to say hello?
Hello!
Hello!
We've got quite the show for you this morning, quite the show. And we're going to talk a lot about Google and their I.O. keynote.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Do we need to start there, or can we start on the island?
Okay, start on the island.
Yeah, go ahead. Do what you
want to start on the island. So
the island of lost toys.
Google Island. Isn't there a song about Google Island?
It was only a 3-hour song. That's something about the weather getting rough. Is that it?
Yeah, so
the tiny conglomerate was lost.
Yeah, Gilligan's Island, Google Island. No, that I mean, imagine. Well, no, I'm not going to go there. But I was reading the article, Phaedra, from you on this, and and the comments there about being open and how committed to openness they are on Google Island was something else, wasn't it?
Well, actually, if you listen to Larry during his little keynote thing, he hammered the open message, right?
Yes.
I'm just stating a statement. I didn't say anything else.
It seems like he made a statement, right?
He said they are open. And what was my favorite was, you know, they're so open, they've had an open invite on the connections for instant messaging. And Microsoft finally connected to them but won't let them connect back. So I thought that was funny.
So there, Microsoft.
Evil empire.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, that was a very funny story. Wired magazine released this article about Google Island. It was pretty funny. The level of openness and your familiars following you around, et cetera, et cetera. But there was some very, very interesting news, especially in the realm of serious games that were announced at the Google I.O. keynote, including Google Play for Education. I thought that was really interesting, kind of the iTunes model for serious games for schools.
Yeah, I actually thought that was really cool. And the whole push that they did on – I guess it was really iTunes U that they were taking off of or taking on, and talking about, you know, the difference in the cost of the device, the way that the teacher could actually review the apps in advance and then push them to each of the students, or as we like to call them in the biz, the endpoints.
Learners. Engaged learners.
Perhaps. No, they're endpoints. They're just an IP address at the end. But I thought that was actually a very, very interesting set of comments and discussions. Did you catch that part, Michael? I don't know if you had a chance to listen to the whole thing yet, because it's pretty long.
I did not get the 3.5 hours takeaway here, but you know, I've been looking at some of the, you know, summary material on this. Like there's a TechCrunch article. I'll drop that into the chat here in just a moment, where it's interesting that Google is talking to organizations with some serious games experience, such as NASA, PBS, others, to do teaming with them to make their content available. And the other interesting note here that I saw was they don't have to use credit cards. You're able to do apps and content and have them charged into an account. So to me, that seems like a very interesting mechanism for Google then to potentially offer some additional discounts or target certain areas, do philanthropic.
Yeah, no, that was all part of it, right? And the thing is, I mean, they're really trying to go seriously after the education market with this, which is good. Yep. And they were I mean, whenever you think of engaging with any type of enterprise, whether it's an institution like a university or a school system or a business, you don't want to just do credit cards. So I am guessing that the K-12 engagement that companies like Microsoft and Apple and others do is very similar, and that Google's not the first one to go, oh, we'll let you set up a procurement account for your school system, right?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, no, it was good.
And schools have definitely gotten penetrated pretty well when it comes to Google and Google Apps as well. You know, my kids are all about Google Drive, all about Google Apps, et cetera, and it's making a big difference for their learning, their sharing, and just the way that they do what they need to do from a school perspective. I'm very impressed with the ways that my children are collaborating with others and turning in assignments and being able to do this all very iteratively with their teachers too. I think that's pretty tremendous. So if the Google Play logs and works well with Google Apps, logs works well with the methods of procurement and doing some, you know, if this works for you, then do this as well. There could be some very interesting models at play here, regardless of what hardware or operating system you're using to access the material.
I would agree, and it sounds like their business model is to stay away from content, so they're really going to go after the whole platform strategy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that came across, I think, really loud and clear in Larry's comments at the end about, you know, we're going to make the platform. We want to see all the cool things that you guys do with it, right? Then again, once you're locked into a platform, all kinds of interesting things can happen.
Well, you know, the other thing that would be really intriguing here, and like I said, I didn't listen to the 3.5-hour keynote as yet. That's several drives in the vehicle to kind of pull that all down.
I don't know if you heard me earlier, Michael. I think it was before you were able to join us. I listened to all 3.5 hours driving down the road at at a rapid clip, streaming it over my iPhone.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Well, you can do that because in the U.S. you have the ability on your grandfathered plan to have as much data as you like.
That's right.
It's different from me here.
Yep.
One gigabyte cap.
And you lost you had to give up your unlimited account too, didn't you?
Well, yes, I did. Or I could have just continued paying for it, which was what I was doing anyway. So
yes, you should have kept it. You should have kept it.
No, I should have paid what? For 2 years worth? No.
Yes.
No.
Because then you come back and you still have unlimited. Now you come back and you're going to get slowed. You'll be slowed and capped. Capped and slowed.
I don't think so. I personally believe that we're going to see mesh network kind of enabled Wi-Fi begin to take hold and be as fast or even faster. Well, maybe not faster than LTE because that's faster than most other things. But we will see ways of getting content delivered to mobile devices that will not wind up getting capped.
Speaking of that.
Wrong.
Yes.
Yes.
This might be a good segue into the news that came out regarding Google Glass. Google Glass announced that they came out with their first game title called Icebreaker. You may recall we discussed a game very similar to this in one of our podcasts.
Yes, and I bet you they just used their new Google Now technology voice recognition to scan all podcasts on the net to come up with their idea.
Time to wear the tinfoil hats.
You got it.
I cannot believe that they took our idea to create these ships that are going through the North Sea trying to get through the ice caps and kind of reach where the seals are and do it as fast as possible. That just makes me, I don't know, it makes me ill.
You be illin.
Oh, this is the different icebreaker. So this icebreaker what was the name of the iOS application, the one that was really hard to read? You remember what I'm thinking about, Michael, the app that said somebody else is nearby to you that's also running the same app?
Yeah.
I mean, we turned that off pretty quick, right?
Yeah, because it was crap.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, because it wasn't the one that a highlighter or something, wasn't
highlight,
it?
Highlight, yeah. These are people nearby that might want to do cool stuff.
Yes.
And that was it.
Yeah, but and it was crap.
The icebreaker lets you rate your conversation. So I wonder if
this is even worse. It gives you a little notification who's nearby with the icebreaker app. You go introduce yourselves and then take pictures and then rate the conversation.
Say, this person sucked.
Well, think about it this way, folks. You know, isn't Google Now coupled with Google Glass going to want to say, hey, here's a card for somebody who's nearby to you who's compatible?
Yep.
Her interests are dogs,
cats,
points,
walks living together, pandemonium.
Star Trek.
Oh, speaking of Star Trek, oh, gosh, are you guys going? Are you there already? Are you in line?
Phaedra's going tonight.
Man.
I want to see it.
I want to be there.
Ain't going to happen tonight, though.
Friend of mine on Facebook put up on his page that he had tickets. Prepaid tickets for two nights opening and couldn't make it. And he was offering them for free. So I responded that saying, yes, I would like to have them and just have Scotty beam me down into Chapel Hill and I will come get them.
Yep. Yep.
I have not been beamed.
You have not been beamed. But you have been beamered.
Yes, I have been.
I am so bad.
And I enjoy that so much. Did you actually stop and see the Zentrum in Greer, or did you just wave at it as you drove past?
I waved at it as I drove past, but I did that just for you.
Well, I appreciate the check-in. Yes. You know, Foursquare is pretty cool.
Yeah, well, I tried to do it on Twitter, and I was talking to Twitter on my phone, and I said, hey.
Have you tried to get Siri to schedule a timer for 4 minutes?
Oh, no.
Yeah, if you want to have some fun,
yes.
Do Siri set timer for 4 minutes.
Okay.
Just for giggles.
And what will those schnitzel giggles do?
Right here, we'll try it right now.
Yes, because I have my phone off because I'm recording a podcast.
Hello, Siri. Set timer for 4 minutes.
Did it work?
Okay. 4 minutes and counting.
Ha. Wow. Ha, 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 It worked.
Thanks for proving me wrong.
Siri knew she was under the watchful eyes of the massive listening audience of gamesatwork.biz.
Absolutely. Because the last time I did this, you know, I asked for 4 minutes and said, Michael, how many minutes would you like for me to set the timer for?
Four.
Michael, I don't know how many minutes. It's like, all right, so Siri now knows. Siri's watching you, the eye in the sky.
Ooh.
I'm still ready for a Siri with the James Bond accent.
So speaking of James Bond, you know, I've shared this with you guys here already. They are filming what I believe is the Ian Fleming movie, The Man Who Would Be Bond, on the street just outside my window.
Woo-hoo! Here
in Budapest.
In Budapest.
Budapest.
Well, that's cool.
There's a ton of people out there, cars, movie trailers. They were having, you know, movie lunches. I was going to invite myself. I didn't do it. I probably should have.
You should have, would have, could have.
So the article, Phaedra, that you gave us here where they were talking about Icebreaker is talking about glassware, which is kind of a cool name to talk about the software that's intended to be run on glass.
Glassware. It is. It's catchy. It's catchy.
And all those glass holes. It was funny if you were watching the Q&A section of the keynote. Robert Scoble was the first person up to ask a question, gets on camera and introduces himself. Hi, Larry. I'm one of the first glass holes.
Oh my God. Are you serious?
Yep. And Larry did it cool. He's like, yeah, and that picture
and
of you in the
shower.
That picture of you in the shower. That just was bad.
Well, I will say that after hearing about that picture several times, I've decided I am not going to ring that bell. I do not need to try to unsee a picture that I
You can never unsee that picture.
Yes. I mean, you know, there are times when you just, you know, like that ugly dog and a few other ones, you just don't need to see those things because then you will see them for the rest of your life.
For the rest of your life.
Yeah. So that's funny that he came up with that. But, you know, I like the idea because when you think about glass is slick, glass is smooth, glass is transparent and open. I mean, What a great name.
Glassware. Yeah, I
agree. It is a great name.
It's catchy.
And glassware is catchy. I like that too. So,
but I hope we can see some nicer games. I mean, real games. None of this let me read your conversation business.
No, that's the early stuff too. This is the Pong of Google Glass, right? I mean, there was either Twit or MacBreak Weekly that was talking about Google Glass in its current incarnation is essentially the Apple II for the people who are now 16, 17, 18 years old.
Right. That's a good point. Right.
Yep.
And so I think, you know, we're looking at Pong, and it will not take long before Pong becomes Super Mario Brothers. You know, or
average Mario Brothers, at
or
least.
Or average Mario Brothers, you know, the initial Mario Brothers, or, you know, maybe Dragon Slayer or something. Who knows? It could be just.
Who knows? Who knows?
Nobody knows.
But the promise of wearable computing, that glass is really the first bit. You know, we've been talking about contact lens implanted kinds of stuff already for years. We know that that's coming. Implantable technology really is not that far away from this other stuff. And look, oh, there's Siri's timer.
Hey.
Borg, we're all going to be Borg.
Yeah, we are all going to be Borg.
I mean, are.
For the people that
we are Borg. We're not are going to be. We are Borg.
So that Google Island, you know, article was talking about a number of things that sit in Neal Stephenson and other kinds of stories, science fiction stories about micro nanobots, you know, being a cloud, being within you and around you, sensors conveying more information directly to your body and having an extension of self. All the things that we have today, I mean, I feel that way already right now with my phone. You know, I rely on it for translation services here in Hungary. I rely on it for map services all the time, you know, Waze and everything else. I rely on it for other kinds of quick communication, you know, whether it's instant messaging or sharing pictures and photos like we were doing just a little earlier here.
Yep.
I have an augmented self already as a result of the technology that I can put in my pocket, and it's not going to be that much further away before, yeah, you can put it on your wrist, yeah, you can put it on your glasses, yeah, you can put it into your ear and have it translate for you directly.
Babelfish. I concur. Speaking of early tech and how this is the early Apple II, so I don't know if you guys were following what's happening in the world of 3D printing in the news recently. Have you guys been grokking that?
Yep, I've been grokking that.
You've been grokking it. So the whole premise is that 3D printing for the individual home use is now getting cheaper and cheaper and cheaper. And so the big news this week was that a young man went and posted some instructions on how to build a semi-automatic machine gun using a 3D printer from your very home. 600 rounds in a minute.
Well, see,
lovely.
I don't see how that's going to work, to be honest, because the pistol, the 3D printed pistol, is not an actual pistol. I can't remember what they call it, but it doesn't shoot the bullet the same way as a regular gun. And so you get one or two shots before the device breaks apart.
Well, isn't that just a feature of the materials that are used for it? I mean, as the material.
Yes, but
strength,
there are not metal 3D printers yet.
Well, that's just because that would be a 3D forge.
Yeah. So I can see the conceptual aspect of a 600 rounds per minute weapon being printed. I just don't believe that the materials that they currently have will support shooting one full clip. I think the device will break apart. However, I did see, and I'm going to try to find a link for the show notes, a new Kickstarter that had a $400 3D printer.
Wow. Well, this gun, supposedly it's made of 100% plastic.
Yep. Which is why it should not be able to handle more than one or two shots before it breaks apart.
You know, there's been all kinds of old spy stories and stuff about plastic weapons like that can get through metal detectors and x-rays and so on and so forth. It raises some interesting thoughts now, doesn't it?
Yep. I think this is it. The PrismX open source 3D printer. 16 days to go. Let me see.
I'm here.
Yep. Yes, you are.
16 days ago. So, think about this for a second, though. If you think about various countries around the world, you know, that have different sets of weapons laws, you can imagine now where a software is very much what's the right term? An armament? It's not an armament. It's a
necessity.
But the design of the thing that can be manufactured and fabricated on site in your very own home, in the privacy of your very own home, could be done. Imagine what that means from a legal perspective and what you might have to go do.
Yes.
Well, think about it, right? You have to register a number of things. You'd have to register your printer. Your printer might have to track what it is that it's extruding and printing and fabricating for you. That might need to go into some sort of a central database. And then you might get some questions about, well, what are you doing that for?
Because I want to. Because I want to.
There were questions. I mean, they asked him in the interview. I know PC Mag interviewed Cody Wilson. This is the person from, I believe his company's name is called DefCAD. It's a nonprofit org. They said, why are you doing this? And in essence, his response was that he believes in the anarchy of the internet and the freedom of information. And so when the State Department asked him to cease and desist and take down the instruction on how to build the gun, he did take it down, but he, you know, very publicly stated that he wasn't happy about the decision.
Well, that's a publicity thing there for sure, isn't it?
Right. Again, he was asked, you know, why didn't you just do if you're so concerned about, the openness of the internet, why didn't you just do something like something else, something that would have been helpful to society, some kind of instruction for, amputee building of a prosthesis.
Well, with a 3D printed gun, you can make some amputees.
Especially when
it explodes in your hand.
Right. And also some of the responses were, look, on the internet, it already teaches you how to build all kinds of bombs and things like that. How is this any different?
Because most of those bombs, the materials are harder to get.
Or the instructions are suspect and have been seeded with incorrect amounts and incorrect other things. It's really interesting. I mean, I would have thought a really interesting use of this technology might have been to create a 3D printer, set of instructions to create 3D printers.
I already have it. That's the MakerBot.
Yeah.
Simpsons did it.
Well, yeah. So, I mean, why spend $400 for a Kickstarter to buy? I have a $400 bot. Why not just
print your own with the one that you don't have?
Well, yeah, you always got to start somewhere, right?
So, you know, last week we talked about the MTAM conference that I was at, and Peter Coffey was there, and he was talking about, on this one panel, and they were talking about the ethics of sensing machines and, machines that can do autonomic information to decide when they have failures and then repair themselves. And then they went to the 3D printers. And you know where this is going, right? And it was machines that would build replications of themselves when they find out that they're going bad and then slowly build an army of machines.
It's like WALL-E. I need to fabricate a new wheel. I'll go get one.
Yep.
Or back to the game kind of notion, I guess you can get a sentient machine at some point that decides it's going to be a board flipper.
Ooh, flip the board.
I'm losing. Forget. Yeah. The only way to win is to stop playing and make you lose because you can't win. Flip the board.
Well, I can flip the board. Yeah, I found the article of the 600 round clip gun. That's from March 1st, it looks like. This thing's been around for a while.
Ars Technica wrote it, yeah.
Yeah. Blowed them up real good.
And what's PC? Oh, the PC Mag is the further discussion with the maker.
But I think, you know, let's have some fun. Let's talk about a real game that exists today that I saw a little article on this week, and I've put in our show notes, called GeoGuessr.
Yes.
You guys have both been playing it.
Well, I've attempted to, so it's very difficult. I mean, you got to guess and say, you know, where in the world is this thing?
Yes. And it's really easy. You just click and then you say, that's my guess. And then you find out how bad off you are. Now, the thing that we learned.
By, 8,000 or 7,600 kilometers.
Yes. My guess. But you have five different sites. And the thing that's cool about it, I thought, and did you realize that you could zoom in?
Yes. And turn around.
Zoom in and turn around.
Jump up. Kiss myself.
Yeah, ow, but, feels good.
But you can't read signage really far away.
No, but you can read some stuff. So once you start realizing you can zoom in and spin 360 around and do other stuff and actually walk down the street, it's just Google Street View that they're using, you can start getting much more information about where you are.
Ooh, boy, I got one really wrong here. It was Australia, and I thought it was like East Texas.
Well, that's the other interesting thing. I think been trying to figure out what the game is here that they're really trying to do. And I think there are two aspects, right? One is to teach people the whole Street View interface, what you can do with it. Uh-huh. And two is to socialize people and realize that, you know, all around the globe, we're kind of the same, right? You thought it was Texas. It was Australia.
Ooh, yeah, well, I thought one was Norway and it was Canada, so I was only 6,300 kilometers off.
I had another one that I thought was in England, and it was actually part of France, right? I had one that I thought was in Southern California. It was in Baja California, which is pretty close. I've had one that I've gotten like 100 kilometers away.
Wow,
that was in Russia.
This is pretty good.
Yeah.
This is pretty good. Yeah, and I like the end. When your game is done, it shows you, you know, what you thought, and it's like, oh, you know, I thought the answer was Congo and it was Botswana. So I was like, oh, that's pretty good. That was pretty close.
Yeah. It's kind of a cool little game.
But I just want to point out that DARPA put out a request, I don't know, maybe it was a year and a half ago, for a tech that would be able to gauge from photographs what the location is of the photographs digitally. Mm-hmm. So maybe this is some kind of sneaky mechanism for eventually crowdsourcing. I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah, I think it very well could be.
Shades of the conversation, Fader, you and I had recently on the, what was it, 2 weeks ago, isn't it?
Yep. Now I'm hyper suspicious, so we'll see. It'll all come out a few years from now.
Well, there's really, I think, something to the notion
34 kilometers away!
Oh, boom. How many points is that worth?
4,493 points.
Whoa.
I was in Welcome to Miami.
Oh, well, yeah, if it said welcome to Miami.
It did not say welcome to Miami anywhere there. I was just having fun with the title. Ooh, this looks like Puerto Rico or Cancun, maybe.
Cancun?
Could be like that.
Cuba?
Could be, no, the houses are too nice and the cars are too new. Can't be Cuba.
Yeah, I like how they shade out the license plate so you can't tell easily from the license
plate. Ah, but the street signs, they don't shade out. You know you're in the U.S. when the street signs actually have words on them.
And they're green and say street.
Yeah, it's like, this is a street. Okay.
Probably not Poland, then.
Exeto moto, rusem sadia.
Portuguese?
I'm thinking it might be Portuguese-y. Let's go down to somewhere near Brazil. I want to say Brazil. Make a guess.
Brazil.
Oh, I was it was in Brazil, but I was in the wrong part of Brazil. It was in Recife.
Ah, see, there you go.
Another 2,213 points. Thank you very much.
All right. So a fun thing to do.
Yes.
But how much fun are you going to have after this podcast with it?
Oh, I've been playing with it for a week now.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I heard about it early this week, and I was like, no, this can't be fun.
So,
and I find it to be very fun.
let's make this more fun. How would Michael game this more? So here's what I would do is that I would use it to allow me to get places in the world and kind of take over Risk-esque style places in the world as mine if I guessed correctly.
Yes.
So, and then there would be a way for you to win pieces of the world away from me if you guessed more correctly.
Yes.
And then we could play with Phaedra and we could have global world domination.
Okay, this has got to be in Australia because you're driving on the wrong side of the road.
But wouldn't that be cool? You know, so remember the old close. Monopoly game?
Yep. It was in South Africa.
Because that would be kind of cool.
It would be kind of cool.
And then once you own places in the world, you might be able to do things there that...
if I own places in the world, I can do things there, let me tell you.
Well, you know, like, okay, I own New Zealand and I've managed to capture that and I've got sufficient pointage there. And so now I'm going to start building up the movie industry. So I'm going to now, you know, increase my media mogul titan score or something like
Your
that.
Your media mogulness.
My mogulosity.
Mogulosity. Street Dragos Voda. Dragos Voda. That sounds Spanish of some sort, right?
I don't know about Voda.
What do you think?
It's hard to say.
Yep.
Hard to say. Well, I think there are ways. I love maps, as you know, yes. And I love interaction.
Oh,
with
man.
The maps.
I was way away. I was in the Ukraine.
Oh, Voda. Well, I had no idea what Voda stood for, so I don't know.
Well, it means not in Mexico.
Yes.
This is going to be somewhere in Africa. Let's make that guess.
Is it the plains down in Africa?
It looked like it, but no, it was Australia.
Well.
See, this is the problem with this game.
Well, yeah, there are deserts all over the world, aren't there?
Yeah. Okay, so now I'm done, but I never figure out how to get to that last, get past. I've only gotten past the end once, and I don't remember how to end it.
Well, you do five, and it does a round.
Yep, and it says round 5 of 5.
And then you can share the score.
Yep. Oh, and then you get finished. Out of it. So let me go
and then
share.
You're done.
Hold on. I guess it wants me to make a guess again.
Or you're finished, I guess would be proper to say.
There we go.
Pot roast is done. So speaking of done, because I'm sure our listeners are just loving this.
Well, I actually want to go back because we didn't really talk about a little bit on the end of the keynote. There was a blog post earlier this week on Larry Page, isn't that his name? You're
trying to pick up the reins from Steve.
No, that's not the blog post. Talking about why he's not been doing things for so long, about vocal paralysis that he's been having. Right? And so he had been skipping a lot of events over the last couple of years, and evidently he's pretty much had it, and it's slowly been getting worse since the founding of Google.
Wow, really?
Yeah. Huh. And so listening to him actually do the close of the keynote, yes, I really do believe he was trying to pick up the reins, right, from Steve, because he really was talking the inspirational aspect of what they're doing, not just the cool tech. And, you know, there's a lot of cool tech in the keynote. But that and the tenor of his voice because of the vocal paralysis – it was powerful. If you have not, you know, any of our listeners, if you have not listened to at least like the last, you know, go to hour two, and listen to about the last half hour. It's about 15 minutes of, or hour three. It's about 15 minutes of him talking and about 15 minutes of him taking questions. It was just awesome. It was awesome. Awesome, 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 awesome.
It sounds really good. So we'll make sure we have that in our show notes from our website so you can find it very easily.
Yeah, and matter of fact, I'll probably just put a link to the video. Mm-hmm. Like the actual embed the video so people can watch it from our site.
Yeah.
And spend 3 hours on our site helping our numbers.
Man, oh man.
Amazing, amazing. And talking about, you know, as a young child, his dad wanted to get him into technology and science, and, you know, drove to this one science competition, and he was too young to get in, and he argued with the guy and got his son in to go to the contest and watch it and everything, and, you know, really showing, You know, little kids like science. They like technology. And, you know, getting them engaged early, getting them engaged via things that are fun, you know, whether that's the maker movement, whether that's gaming technology, whether that's social activities, I think is critical for kind of setting the stage for the next level of innovation and fun and cool stuff.
Yeah, and getting kids excited I think is huge too. My 9-year-old was telling me just yesterday that airplane flaps were invented by a 13-year-old.
Whoa.
I've not actually, you know, gotten the cited material on that, but you know, he was genuinely like, you know, this is so cool. And he's reading, you know, the How Things Work books, and he's looking at a variety of videos and the like. You know, it's really cool to see children get so tapped into creating, innovating, and doing more. I agree with you, Michael. I think this is great. And the focus that we are seeing from so many of these larger entities of what needs to happen in education to make things better and help is fantastic.
Well, speaking of making things better, we want to hear back from you. Come to our Twitter feed at games@work_biz or our Facebook page or our Google Plus page and community. We have a place for you to chat and talk with us there.
Or
drop us an email or hit us up individually at Twitter. I'm MichaelRowe01.
Carolina Big Blue.
I'm Innovate Game.
And that's spelled INNOV, the number 8, and game.
Thank you.
Just for those people who don't have it memorized.
Well, and we're so pleased to have come and talked to you today. And please look forward to another show next week.
Absolutely.
Excellent. And we'll talk to y'all soon.
Bye. You've been listening to GamesAtWork.biz, the podcast about gaming technology and play. We are part of the Blueberry Podcasting Network. And we'd like to thank the band Random Encounters for their song, Big Blue. You can follow us on Twitter at GamesAtWork_biz or at our website at GamesAtWork.biz.